Billy Angel's One Law for All, Vegas is a sprawling, pulpy corruption thriller that starts with the kind of scene that feels both sleazy and instantly dangerous. A Las Vegas senator selecting a tall, red-haired dancer for a private encounter in a penthouse suite. The woman, Janelle Park, texts her girlfriend, "Got a senator tonight," and then disappears. That message becomes the first thread in a much larger tapestry. At first, the case looks like a missing person matter, the sort of thing that might be shrugged off in a city built on secrecy, vice, and transactional pleasure. But the book quickly makes clear that Janelle's disappearance is not an isolated crime. It is the point where sex, power, politics, organized crime, and international business begin to overlap. The story moves out from Las Vegas and into the orbit of the One Law for All Foundation, a loose but highly effective network of lawyers, detectives, activists, and tech-savvy operatives. Jimmy Cole is the legal brain, Rick Rizzo is the police instinct, and together they operate like a hybrid investigative unit that has no patience for the formal limits of any single institution. They subpoena, interview, surveil, track phones, analyze files, and rely on both old-fashioned persistence and modern tools. Their approach matters because the case is buried under layers of money and influence. They are not simply looking for a missing dancer. They are trying to prove how an entire apparatus protects itself. The early chapters establish the book's tone and method. Janelle's twin brother Mark, her friend Kaya, and others on the island side of the story first contact the Foundation after realizing that Janelle has vanished. That broadens the emotional stakes immediately. This is not just a mystery in a club city. It is a family crisis, and the people who love Janelle are forced to rely on strangers in order to get answers. Jimmy and Rizzo begin by tracing the obvious clues. Janelle worked at the Galaxy Hotel. She was linked to VIP escorts, and her last text points directly towards Senator Larry Sneed. The book then repeatedly returns to the same pattern. A sexual encounter opens a door. A casual exchange reveals a name, and a supposedly private indulgence points to a public conspiracy. Mendy Wells, another dancer and Janelle's girlfriend, becomes an early witness, but the story immediately shows the cost of involvement. She is beaten so badly that her face is left shattered, and her injuries stand as proof that somebody is willing to use extreme violence to erase witnesses. That violence transforms the investigation. Now Jimmy and Rizzo know they are dealing not only with disappearance, but with a deliberate cover-up. Their own social strategy reflects the world they're investigating. They cultivate Sugar and Tanya, two dancers whose flirtation and intimacy give the investigators access to the club scene. The book is frank about sexuality. Dancers, escorts, politicians, and fixers all use sex as currency, leverage, and cover. Jimmy and Rizzo are not immune to that atmosphere. They flirt, seduce, and even become physically involved with women connected to the case. And that intimacy is shown as both a weakness and a tool. It opens mouths, loosens tongues, and occasionally clouds judgment. As the investigation deepens, the book starts to reveal the architecture of the conspiracy. Senator Sneed is not just a corrupt politician taking advantage of dancers. He is a node in a wider network. His aide, Ralph Loki, arranges dates and manages messy details. Hotel staff, club managers, and fixers all help keep the system running. Jimmy and Rizzo learn that Sneed is mixed up in a land deal involving a Chinese business entity, the Quanrong Holding Group, and a promised transfer of desert acreage. That moves the story beyond Vegas nightlife and into geopolitical corruption. Sneed's private appetites are tied to public bargains.
The same man who wants dancers sent to penthouse suites is also promising land to foreign interests. The book frames this as a networked system of corruption, not a single crooked act. Everyone is protecting someone else because everyone is getting paid.
The narrative also keeps contrasting old-school police work with digital evidence. Clues come through texts, Skype calls, LoJack trackers, keyring recorders, computer files, and airmail packages of DNA evidence. At the same time, the team still relies on stakeouts, interviews, and physical surveillance. One of the book's strengths is that it treats both modes as necessary. Rizzo may be a cop from the more physical school of investigation, but Jimmy's legal and analytical mind turns hints into admissible evidence. They track a keyring recorder hidden with Wanda Wetbush, learn to gather DNA from office items and drinks, and use hotel records and flight logs to build timelines. The team's effectiveness comes from this balance. Rizzo knows how to read people and pressure them. Jimmy knows how to make the results stick. Janelle's case keeps widening. The book takes the team to the borderlands, where a planned weapons test with BLM and Border Patrol personnel turns into an unexpected firefight.
Rizzo, using a Barrett rifle and rocket bullets, helps neutralize armed men who are digging in the desert. What appears at first to be a separate episode turns out to matter because the same territory becomes the burial ground for bodies connected to the Janelle conspiracy. The investigation's geography expands from hotel suites to desert graves. In that sense, the border is not just a setting, it symbolizes the way violence gets displaced out of sight. The book repeatedly shows how powerful people push crimes away from the public eye, whether by sending people to the desert, burying evidence, or manipulating media coverage. Once the team discovers that Janelle may have been murdered and buried, the tone hardens. The search is no longer about finding a missing dancer alive. It is about identifying the body, reconstructing the last night, and finding who ordered the cleanup. The buried remains become an evidentiary anchor, and the story uses forensic details to make the conspiracy concrete. Sneed's behavior grows more erratic as pressure builds. He drinks Johnny Walker Blue Label, leans on Xanax and Percocet, and shows the brittle arrogance of a politician who thinks his status protects him. But status starts to crumble as the Foundation's network closes in. At the same time, the book broadens into politics and public relations. Sneed's office, his donors, his campaign people, and his allies in the blogosphere all try to manage the story. A conservative blog, Under DC's Rug, exposes some of the background, while Sneed attempts to fight back with threats and media manipulation. He wants to keep his political machine moving while hiding the consequences of his actions. He is also shown as dependent on people around him in more ways than one. Lockie arranges dates, Harrison or Garcia helps with logistics, and various fixers are used when the situation gets too hot. The book's political world is one where corruption isn't hidden from everybody, it is simply shared among enough insiders that no one feels motivated to stop it. Another major layer is the animal rights and environmental activism subplot, which at first seems tangential, but eventually becomes central to the cover-up structure. Marlene St. John's and PETA figures are shown in a political bargaining space where ideals are traded for influence. Sneed observes that certain activist groups can be bribed or steered, while others become inconvenient and dangerous. The infamous Refuse shootings reveal how messy and lethal those bargains can get. What was supposed to be a fix or intimidation job spins into a tragic shooting, with multiple wounded and Marlene killed. The aftermath makes clear that this is not just a sex and politics case. It is a murder conspiracy extending through campaign money, lobbyists, activists, and criminal subcontractors. In the middle of all of this, the book never loses its human texture. Sugar and Tanya are not just information sources. They are fully drawn characters who have their own relationships, needs, and instincts. They are drawn into the investigation because they know the club world and can move through it with ease. Their flirtation with Jimmy and Rizzo is playful, but it also serves the plot. They hear names, recognize VIPs, see body language, and help identify that Janelle's last contacts included Sneed. Sugar's memory of the phrase "got a senator tonight" becomes one of the key moments in the investigation. Later, the book uses their presence in restaurants, poolside hangouts, and hotel lounges to keep the story from becoming purely procedural. The investigation breathes through social scenes, banter, and desire. As the team pieces together timelines, the narrative grows more formal. They interview club managers, hotel personnel, and staff like Morris and Lachi. They use internal contradictions to trap suspects. Wanda Wetbush becomes an especially important witness because she works with a hidden keyring recorder and provides the team with valuable inside information. Through her, they confirm that Lachi was managing dancers, that Sneed liked redheads and preferred tall women, and that the club machinery around the senator was designed to produce private access on demand. Wanda's role shows how the Foundation operates. They do not merely suspect people. They recruit, document, and preserve evidence. That is where Jimmy's lawyering matters. Suspicion alone will not bring down a senator. The team needs names, recordings, DNA, movement records, and corroborating witnesses. The China connection gives the story a larger political and criminal horizon. Kitiona, Kaya, and Mark travel to Beijing, where they investigate the Asian Assembly and the Quanrong interests. Their trip exposes another corrupt elite network, one that merges business prestige, nationalist power, and shadowy enforcement. The book leans into the idea that international interests are using American political weakness to gain land, resources, and access. That foreign layer is linked back to Sneed's domestic corruption, making the case feel like a cross-border conspiracy rather than a local scandal. When Kitiona and the others return, they bring back crucial information that helps confirm the scale of the plot.
At the same time, the book keeps pushing toward physical proof. Carol, using her own brand of flirtation and social engineering, gets close enough to Sneed to retrieve DNA evidence. The Foundation also sends samples through the chain of custody, tests them, and uses them to narrow down the timeline. One of the most important breakthroughs comes when pubic hair and other forensic traces connect directly to Janelle's death. This is where the hybrid investigative team is at its best. Rizzo's instincts, Jimmy's legal structure, Carol's seduction-based access, and the others' technological support all fit together. The case becomes prosecution-ready rather than just morally persuasive. As pressure mounts, cracks begin to form in the conspiracy. Lachie becomes less willing to sacrifice himself for Sneed. Toms, the arranger, starts to fear being left holding the bag. Roxy and other escort workers reveal more about Sneed's behavior and preferences, and their testimony helps show that he sought out different women to avoid reminders of what happened to Janelle. There is a chilling logic to the book's sexual politics. The men in power consume women as if they were disposable, and when something goes wrong, the women are expected to disappear quietly. The Foundation's work is to interrupt that disposability and force the hidden network into the open. By the final chapters, the net tightens. Warrants are prepared. The Secret Service, FBI, and local law enforcement coordinate. Sneed's mobility is reduced. His allies begin to defect. And testimony from people like Toms starts to turn. Roxy flees, Lochie tries to manage the fallout, and the possibility of a perp walk becomes real. The book stages the collapse of the conspiracy as both a legal victory and a moral reckoning. Jimmy and Rizzo finally have enough to move from suspicion to action. They have the DNA, the witnesses, the travel records, the hotel connections, and enough pressure on the accomplices that the whole structure can no longer hold. What makes One Law for All Vegas memorable is the way it turns a missing dancer case into a portrait of interconnected corruption. The book insists that evil is rarely solitary. It is procedural, social, erotic, political, and financial. Senators need fixers, fixers need club managers need silence, and silence is bought with money, sex, fear, or all three. Against that system, the Foundation's strength is teamwork. Jimmy brings legal discipline, Rizzo brings police intuition, and the rest of the network brings access, persistence, and loyalty. Together, they transform rumors into evidence and evidence into a case. By the end, the reader understands not only what happened to Janelle Park, but how a city like Las Vegas can become the perfect machine for hiding the truth.